Route 616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. This is RJ here, and welcome to Route 616. This is actually the big 2-0, episode 20. Wow. And we've not missed a week yet. I'm here with some co-hosts. I'm here with Bill. Say hi, Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
And I'm here with the guy who wishes there was more Spider-Man this week. It's Dan.
That's not funny. You're an evil little shit. That's not funny.
This podcast is now on hold as Dan is seeking legal action.
Legal action,
he's not
going
to get the law involved. He's just going to come to your house and murder you in your sleep.
That's true.
Yeah, pretty much, it's a plan.
Takes Finn's into his own hands.
Yeah, I've got to go sharpen a knife, Bill. You want to keep him busy?
Sure.
Okay, there you go.
So this week... professional sound effects provided here on Route 616. What the fuck is this? Is this podcast? Oh, okay. So my original opening for you, I was gonna make fun of you for drawing with whoever you drawed with last weekend, but then I thought you had lost them, but you drew. Brightly. So I was like, that's not as it wasn't as good of an intro.
I also pointed out that perhaps the week when both of our teams lost was not the week to do that.
Yeah,
you didn't want to do that because Brighton's actually ahead of all of us right now. Yeah. So nobody wants to be bragging except me.
I realized that it was not the best intro, so that one was.
You heard it here first, folks. The only time they pick on me are those rare occasions where they win. Any other time, they're awful quiet about this shit.
I don't know. I'm pretty.
Oh no! I've been picking on you all week for the fact that we're still higher than you in the standings.
Yeah.
At the moment, give it time.
You've got Arsenal in the weekend. We've got
we're gonna get destroyed.
Team that's about to get their stadium owned by a porn site.
Ooh.
You didn't see that I posted to the chat, Dan?
No, I missed that. Everton.
Strip chat just filed a $200 million petition for naming rights for Everton Stadium.
Ooh, Strip Stadium. Let's go to the strip.
Anyways, let's get back to the comics.
Chat up the strippers.
As fun as talking about strip chat would be, we're here to talk about some old Marvel comics. This week should be interesting. We're going to start off with Fantastic Four. Yeah, maybe not. We're Fantastic Four 21 is going to start us off this week.
Fantastic Four 21 is going to be interesting for sure. Whether or not it's good is up for debate. But
And then we go into an important issue of Iron Man with issue number 48 of Tales of Suspense. And then we have Tales to Astonish, a stretch of Tales to Astonish, actually, which we're all going to be miserable during, or surprisingly might enjoy. Tales to Astonish issue number 50.
Spoiler, I won't.
Issue number 51, the A story, and then a shitty B story. And then we have Strange Tales issue number 116, A and B stories. So, an interesting lineup. Bill and I are actually definitely wishing there was some Spider-Man this week, but here we are.
I'd settle for Daredevil's debut, but we have to wait another week for that.
Yeah.
I think it is next week, isn't it?
No, we still have a bit before we're going to get it on here. I just read it myself, so.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of your reading.
Yeah. So, Fantastic Four, issue number 21, The Hate Monger. This is a Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, of course, project, and George Russo's is on inks, and Jack Kirby doing the cover by himself, Artie Simic on letters, September 1963 release, a 22-page story, and I'm going to give this interesting issue off the bill.
All right. They definitely made choices with this one.
They certainly did make some choices.
The design of the bad guys. Pretty interesting.
Oh, just you wait.
You just wait.
Oh, you wait.
God, it's a huge summary here. Wow.
Don't read it. I want to get your reaction live when the villain's revealed.
Okay. Yeah, do not read ahead for this one.
I'm ready.
All right. So this episode
it sucks.
Opens.
Let's go on to the next title.
Oh, no. We're going through this wacky shit.
Goody. I mean, great.
This issue opens with humorous instances of a seeming earthquake shaking the Baxter building and disrupting three of the Fantastic Four's recreational activities, but it turns out it's just Ben punching a giant steel punching bag he made that's punching into the wall, because despite the fact that this is a 22-page story, they only had 20 pages of actual story.
Typical Marvel.
Yeah. And Reed directs their attention to a newspaper discussing how someone called the Hate Monger is stirring up sentiments in the city, but they can't do anything about him because, well, he's saying absolutely heinous stuff. He's not going far enough to break any laws. So they decide to go for a walk to take their mind off this horrible person that they learned about 3 seconds ago. And they stumble right into one of his rallies. And so we're introduced to the Hate Monger, who's wearing chainmail and then a purple Ku Klux Klan robe over it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's GOP.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's where the GOP's headed.
He's where the GOP was there back then. That's where they were.
Oh, no. He's where they're headed now. I haven't told you who he is yet. There's a reason this story is unique beyond the artistic choices on his outfit.
Okay.
And he's got a nice fascist army guarding him, and he riles up the crowd against the Fantastic Four, but the Fantastic Four smash up his stage, and he pulls out his hate ray and shoots them with it and fills them with hate. So they start fighting amongst each other. And we get a couple pages of them fighting. And eventually they decide they're going to all break up. And Ben, Sue, and Johnny take off to...
Break up? You mean like the Beatles?
Yeah, the Fantastic Four was never together again.
Yeah, you could almost call the Hate Monger or Yoko Ono.
Wow. Nicely done.
And anyway, Reed heads back to the Baxter building alone, where he discovers various security officials and doormen all severely injured from someone forcing their way into the building.
Okay.
And Reed's trying to figure out who it was. And oh, look, it was Nick Fury.
Oh, thank God. I was worried this was a January 6th situation.
Yeah. With all the tact you'd expect from Fury. When he was told that he wasn't allowed in without permission, he just decided to go in anyway. And so he has a meeting with Reed, and they catch up on the events of Massacre Mountain, which we've covered previously on the podcast.
I was shocked at this point how quickly they brought Fury to modern continuity.
Yeah, because this is way before S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
At this point, he's working for the CIA. Which is an odd choice, given that in the Sergeant Fury comic, it was Reed that was working for the precursor of the CIA. But, anyway, Fury wants the Fantastic Four to help with a fictitious Central American country that's been completely taken over by the Hate Monger. But since Reed's all gassed up on hate, he figures he can handle it himself, and he doesn't need those losers to help him. So he hops into Pogo Plane and heads for South America. And we get the other Fantastic Four all getting jealous that he's going to do it and figure they could do it better. So they all head for the Baxter building, and Fury's just sitting there waiting for them. So Fury tells them where he went. And they hop into their passenger ICBM and fly to South America. The Hate Monger catches on what they're doing. So he takes some sort of tunneling missile thing that doesn't really make much sense, but Stan's trying to convince us that the Russians are building one as we speak. Strangely, it's 70 years later and it has not materialized.
I forgot about that moment. That made me laugh when I read that.
Wow.
So after a brief diversion to tunnel under the Ukraine, the hate monger also tunnels to South America, and we're setting up for a big conflict.
You're really taking liberties with this one.
Dan's not the only one who can make shit up. And anyway, we see some of the rebel forces led by the hate monger stockpiling ammunition, and Reed just reaches over from the next county with a stick of dynamite and blows it all up. And then a fighter plane flies by, and he reaches up and pulls the missiles off it.
That's a bit of a stretch, don't you think?
Oh, fuck off. God.
And we get a scene of a bunch of rebels traveling down this suspicious blue road in the middle of the jungle and not questioning it at all. And all of a sudden, the road rises up and attacks them because it's just Reed's body stretched. And he steals their guns and throws them in the lake because this is peak comic code where you can't murder them, even if they're bad people. And he finds a giant hate ray machine. And so he sneaks into the building around it to go and try to deactivate it. And immediately gets gassed with nerve gas that only paralyzes him for some reason. And he's brought before the hate monger.
Unnerved gas.
Yeah, pretty much. And he's brought before the hate monger, who's planning to use a giant hate ray to bounce it off the moon and coat the entire Earth with hate rays so that everyone will hate each other and follow him. And just then, Fury busts in and rescues Reed and shoots a whole bunch of people in one of those incredibly comedic artist and writer not communicating very well about the comic code, because Fury runs in with a submachine gun and he's spraying it off throughout the room, and you just see like hats and guns flying everywhere as people are dropping them, as they're clearly getting shot off panel. And then the next panel, when they realize that, you know, we can't show this, they're all fine and surrendering.
Okay.
And so the hate monger decides to use Reed to fight off Fury and gives him the antidote pill to the nerve gas. But it turns out it's also the antidote to the hate ray. And so,
fuck.
Yeah, this comic has problems.
Why?
And, this is not... So Reed and Fury team up against the hate monger, and Fury tries to shoot him, but he's lowered a screen of plexiglass that's bulletproof between them, so they can't shoot him.
Transparent aluminum.
Pretty much. And, the hate monger escapes. Fury and Reed leave the compound and set out to find the rest of the Fantastic Four and force feed them the antidote pills, which works. So they all are no longer full of hate, and they team up against the hate monger with Fury, who murders but doesn't a whole bunch more of the hate monger's guards. They fight their way off, and then Fury actually shoots and kills the hate monger. Like, actually, not hinted at. It's shown on panel. And who, you might ask, is evil enough that even in peak comic code, you can be shown him being murdered on screen? Well, they pull the hood off, and who do you think it is? It's Adolf Hitler! And so they all get back on the Poco plane, fly back to North America, and we get a positive talk about how hate will never win as long as America prevails. The end.
Hoorah.
You know, there's when I can bring up any episode of the original Scooby-Doo cartoon and it's more complicated and better written than this crap.
I bet you thought it was Donald Trump, didn't you? No, I'm just kidding.
No, no. Although it could be. It could be in today's day and age. But seriously, Scooby-Doo is written better than this.
Yeah, this was, full transparency, this wasn't the best issue of Fantastic Four that we've read.
Really? Really? Well, to be fair, there's nowhere to go but up with this story, with this title. Because they're not exactly winning any friggin' prizes.
That's not necessarily true with a few issues away.
Yeah. Oh, we'll
and, this was an interesting issue, too, because the main story is god-awful. But a lot of the side stuff that I just brushed over, because, like, this is a 22-page story that has, like, 10 pages of plot in it. But a lot of the side stuff was actually pretty fun.
Oh, the side stuff saves. The main story fucking sucks. The middle of this issue was rough to get through. I don't even remember any of, like, what happens in the middle. It was so boring. And Fury also carries a lot of this issue.
Yeah, because Fury's right out of Sergeant Fury in this. When He's I first great. Read it, I wasn't reading Sergeant Fury.
I just noticed, on the cover, he's in his torn uniform.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to get people who read the Sergeant Fury to try Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But when I first read it, I was annoyed from how different he seems from the Sergeant Fury you get in like every other modern 616 appearance. But he's completely on brand for Sergeant Fury. The off-brand version is that they've toned back him a lot when they put him into S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So
no,
this one averaged
crap.
This one
well, no, Fury
out,
is great is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This one averaged out to a 3-star. There was a lot of terrible stuff and a lot of really good stuff. And almost nothing that was just okay. Like, there were parts that I was absolutely loving it, and then parts that I just couldn't wait to get done.
Mm-hmm. You know, coming into this, before we started recording today, I actually thought I'd given this a 3, but I actually only gave it a 2. I think it's mainly because of that middle stretch that I was talking about that was fucking rough that knocked it down to a 2 for me.
And I mean, I think mine probably got a little higher rating too because I'm reading more of them in one sitting than you. And I mean, as bad as this was, compared to your average Strange Tales or Tales to Astonish, this is still fucking Shakespeare. This
yeah.
was bad,
yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
it's...
Oh, yeah, I can see
this
the parallels.
This was bad, but it's a whole other level of bad when you get to those ones. And it was like two pretty terrible Strange Tales stories, and then this. And so by comparison, this wasn't awful.
It kind of makes it look like Hamlet, I guess.
Yeah, or I can
especially with everyone dying at the end.
Well, the last Strange Tales is actually pretty decent.
So. Yeah, it was, but
that
still,
that might have elevated your mood, though, too.
As Bill was reading this, I was thinking, damn, this is Hamlet in a comic book form.
Full disclosure, I don't actually like Hamlet.
I've never actually read Hamlet.
I've never met him. He's dead.
I like Macbeth, personally.
Oh, Macbeth is a good one.
Macbeth rules.
Or Titus Andronicus.
We're not here to talk about Shakespeare.
Anyway, I'm sure at some point we'll come to a comic that's like directly lifted from a Shakespeare.
So, Dan, what was your rating of this one?
I think I know the answer. If I was really, really drunk, I would give it a 2 because there are some amusing things about it. The whole
it's Hitler
bad guy. No, the Hitler bit's just bullshit. That's whatever. It's just
that was
just dumb.
That was one of the dumbest things. That's why I didn't want you to know until I got to it.
Yeah, it's so stupid. It's not even anticlimactic. It's just pointless. It doesn't have any impact. Right? It's so stupid.
Oh, and don't worry. He did die in this issue. There will be more appearances from the Hate Monger.
Oh, he certainly comes back.
They're always Hitler, and every time he has died, they're just his body doubles because it wasn't stupid enough.
While we're on the subject, he returns in Tales of Suspense, issue number 66.
Have you guys ever seen the film The Boys from Brazil?
No.
You need to see it, because that would explain the multiple Hitlers.
Nick Fury, this is his first time in the current time frame we talked about, and Strange Tales 155
just
is
no sell that completely, Ryan.
Yeah. Thanks for backing us up on that, buddy. That's awesome.
I didn't have it even in the comment. I haven't seen it.
it's a story of Joseph Mengele using genetic experiments in Hitler's DNA to bring Hitler not back to life, but to have a child born with Hitler's characteristics.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's quite a scary film for its time. Yeah,
probably.
It is actually really good. And for the record, that was some great Kali level selling, Ryan.
Yeah. Still no more than a two.
Dan says like he knows what I'm talking about.
Not a clue. Not a freaking clue. No idea.
As we exit the pool, dude,
I'm part of the team. I'm trying to cheer you on here. Come on, fuck off. man.
As we exit the Punjabi prison, let's move on to Tales of Suspense, issue number 48.
This was about that much of a train wreck.
Yeah.
And strangely, I enjoyed that more than I should have, too.
Yeah. Tales of Suspense number 48. The new Iron Man battles the mysterious Mr. Doll. And by the new Iron Man, it means he gets a new set of armor in this issue. Spoiler alert. But it's on the cover, so fuck. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Yes, Steve Ditko's doing the art on this. That's right. We have inks by Dick Gyers and Jack Kirby and Sol Brodsky doing the cover. And you have Sam Rosen on letters. September 1963 release. This is an 18-page story. And... you're welcome, Dan. This is yours.
Ooh, hey. Well, thank you.
We're getting closer to the classic Iron Man look.
We are, because right on the cover you see the new Iron Man. So he's had a little sort of candy apple red there. And apparently this issue is not one you dare miss, according to the cover. So, and this is called the Mysterious...
They also call it book length, despite the fact that it's only like...
18.
Oh, it is 18. Yeah, that's right.
He's getting
length in a couple of years, but at this point, it's still a little short.
He starts getting his extra pages for a bit here. He takes Ant-Man's extra pages, takes Giant Man's extra pages.
He can keep them.
Yeah, hopefully he does.
Iron Man is infinitely more readable.
Yeah.
You say so. Okay, so this is actually...
it's just the one title you're pulling. What do you mean?
Yeah, I know, right? No, this is a big synopsis, so brace yourself. Okay, the new Iron Man battles mysterious Mr. Doll, Tarker Doll, of the Vindaloobian people, for all you Red Dwarf fans out there. Okay, we start with Pepper Potts delivering the news.
I had a mouthful of beer when you said that.
Sorry. Scum. Delivers the news to Tony Stark that one of his business associates, steel tycoon Carlton Carter, has backed out of a deal. The bastard. Stark doesn't understand why Carter has done this and drives to Carter's estate in order to make him feel really, really guilty and bad and get back in the deal. To take up the matter personally. Once there, he spots a suspicious man dressed in a strange costume slinking around in the shadows. He dons his Iron Man armor and sets out to investigate. Once inside the mansion, he sees Carter on the floor, cowering in fear, with a strangely garbed fellow standing over him. Carter tells the man to let him go, that he has complied with his demands and has cut off his business with Tony Stark. But the strange man continues to poke at a doll he holds in his hand, causing Carter to writhe in pain. Now go do that voodoo that you do so well. Okay. Iron Man enters the room and challenges...
All right, Hedy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was nice to know somebody recognized that. Anyway.
I've probably got that entire movie memorized.
You and me both. I actually watched it about 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
You can't live without it at least once a year. As Iron Man lifts the bad guy up into the air, the self-proclaimed Mr. Doll rearranges the appearance of his clay doll to resemble Iron Man. Slowly starts squeezing it. This inflicts intense claustrophobic pain to Iron Man, causing him to spin and fall off Carter's balcony into the ocean. He nearly drowns before the pain subsides and he's able to crawl out of the water. Mr. Doll, thinking he has finished Iron Man for good, turns his attentions back to Carter. Iron Man rushes back to his office for a set of AA batteries to recharge his chest plate's batteries. Stark passes out for several hours after barely plugging himself into the electrical outlet in time.
Yes, I hate that trope so much.
You read that right, folks. Later that day, Stark tells Pepper to hold all pots, calls, as he doesn't want to be disturbed for anything. He then sets about creating a new lighter set of armor that would place less strain on his heart. Smart man. Good idea. Very good idea. Meanwhile, this is great. Mr. Doll, that's literally what it says. Mr. Doll has been forcing more and more wealthy individuals to sign over their fortunes to him. And the police are unable to do anything, as it has all been done in the letter of the law. Mr. Doll then decides to turn his attention to Tony and begins to mold his doll into Stark's image. Back at Stank Industries, Stark has completed construction on the components of his new red and gold Iron Man armor. As he dons the armor for the first time, he describes how it utilizes an intricate system of magnets to connect its form-fitting components to each other. As he puts the armor's redesigned face mask on, the new Iron Man, champion of champions, is born.
Okay, so pause for a second. So to give the context on why Iron Man apparently needed this new armor is because his old armor was really heavy and he felt like he wasn't being as effective as he could be.
And
as how long do we think that's going to last, that he has less drain on his power with the new armor?
Yeah, well, it was also the fact that fans were writing in telling Stan that the Iron Man design sucked ass.
I mean, they liked the new one enough that literally out of this 18-page comic, three whole pages are him suiting up in the new armor before they reveal its look.
They spotlight this new armor a lot. They're putting a lot into this.
That was shown on the cover, so the whole suit-up reveal didn't really have the effect that they were hoping for.
Of course, yeah. Anyway, to get back, I'm only halfway through this, by the way. Sometime later, the police visit Stark Industries to inform Stark that Mr. Doll has somehow been convincing millionaires to turn over their assets, and they want his help to set a trap so they can catch him in the act. As they leave, a guard is left to protect Stark. That's bright. He tells the guard that he needs a few minutes of private time with Pepper, so he can ask her out on a date. Pepper's extremely excited by this because she's just a mindless bimbo, apparently. And though the guard is unsure, he agrees to leave the two of them alone in Stark's office. Much to her disappointment, Tony tells Pepper to keep up the act while he sneaks out and finds Iron Man.
It wasn't an act!
What?
I said it wasn't an act.
Sure. Iron Man arrives at the office, dismisses the guard. Suddenly, Mr. Doll appears on the scene and changes his doll to imitate Iron Man. I thought he already had done.
Okay, but this is a new suit, so it doesn't work
on the old one. Gotcha.
Because Stan doesn't know how voodoo works.
Apparently. Once again, he starts to press on the doll, causing Iron Man severe pain. He then commands Iron Man to chase out Stark's security guards. With Iron Man quivering under his control, Mr. Doll explains how he stole his magical voodoo doll from a witch doctor in Africa. Sorry, what?
Yeah, you read it right.
Africa?
Yeah.
Tigers in Africa? 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 The fuck? Who wrote this? A 12-year-old?
Yeah, although actually, you make fun of that. Voodoo arose in West Africa.
It's the trope for voodoo to come from Africa. That's been
usually
a long
gets attributed to the Caribbean, but
I know it was passed down to them. But voodoo in Africa, the voodoo as we know it, it was more of God. Let me try this again. It was more of
black magic.
It was more of a religion than magic.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, of course. I mean, he doesn't know what voodoo is, but this is a pretty common pop culture.
It's more of an older trope, too. Yeah. It's more of an older trope,
too. It's a fairly common pop culture depiction of voodoo from the time. And him attributing it to Africa isn't...
It's not too
terribly render. More inaccurate than any other depiction of voodoo you'll get in the next 20 years.
That's fair.
It's still like it's still wrong and like dumb, but
and hold
it's,
on,
it's not that off for what was going on around then.
Yeah, I hear a bell ringing. You know what that means, folks? It's that time of the podcast when we ask Ryan if he's seen a certain movie, and he says no. Ryan, have you seen the film The Serpent and the Rainbow?
Of course not.
There you go, folks. Yet another movie Ryan hasn't seen. Oh, well.
He's living the gimmick tonight, brother.
You need to watch this movie, by the way. Okay. Anyway, Mr. Doll calls Iron Man a weakling and orders him to leave the room, but not to try to escape or he will cause him more pain. Iron Man falls to the floor in severe pain and crawls into his laboratory. With the door locked behind him, he decides on a risky gambit. He will disable his chest plate, causing his heartbeat to slow down, and prevent Mr. Doll from being able to control his pain. What?
I've read the comic. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Don't worry about it.
With his chest plate disabled, he fanatically works on a project that he hopes will allow him to defeat Mr. Doll. When the project is complete, he reactivates his chest plate and sets forth to confront Mr. Doll again. As Iron Man barges into the room, Mr. Doll begins to manipulate his clay doll into his image again. Iron Man uses his new transistorized ray gadget. I swear to God, that's actually what it says.
Yes,
transistorized ray gadget. We're coming into the transistor era of Iron Man now.
Apparently.
We flirted with it before, but we kind of left it alone for a bit, and now we're coming back.
Okay, so he uses his ray gadget to mold the doll into the image of Mr. Doll himself. The surprised Mr. Doll immediately drops the doll, fearing he might hurt himself. As the doll hits the floor, he collapses into unconsciousness. Iron Man then scoops him up and hands him over to the police. Afterwards, Tony and Happy realize they've left Pepper locked in the room. She is not happy. And that's the end.
Yeah, it was anybody? A lot more fun to read than it sounded with your synopsis.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I did like the part at the end when Tony can't understand why Pepper's mad.
Okay. I don't understand why she's mad. He saved her life.
Because Tony claimed to be in love with her for like 3 seconds and then ditched her in a room and forgot about her for several hours.
Because she's actually in love with him.
Really?
Yeah, she's really? Actually. That's why I said earlier it's not an act.
Boy, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Because he was like, keep up the act. And
then he just left and forgot her there for like 8 hours and finally came back and she's furious and storms off and Happy's like, but how do you figure women? And Tony's like, women I can figure, Happy, but Pepper, she's in the class by herself, meaning he legitimately doesn't understand why she's mad.
The guard must have thought they were really going at it all that time. My God.
Yeah. Well, he is Tony Stank.
So, yes.
Well, you know what? This isn't that terrible a story.
It's more fun to read.
It's way better than I expected when I saw Mr. Doll on the cover.
Yeah, and Mr. Yeah. Doll's a shittier puppet master, so.
Yeah.
And his costume also makes me pine for the days of the Hatemonger again. Because it's worse than the Hatemonger's costume.
Oh, it's
which is saying something.
He's on some El Diablo bullshit.
Yeah, well, no, I like the new armor. The story really isn't that terrible because... It goes in a different direction. It's not a communist or an alien, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Right? Africa?
What, a tiger in Africa? but it's, yeah, it's got some good moments. There's a few moments that make zero freaking sense. Like, the continuity really struggles at times with some of the stuff that's going on. But all in all, it's not that bad a story.
Yeah.
I give it a good solid 2 without even hesitating.
Yeah, I think a lot of the continuity issues comes from the fact that Steve was on this issue, and the Marvel method is a lot of, at this time, was a lot of Stan would come up with a concept, and then he'd give it to the artist who would go off and draw something, then he'd come in back and fill in dialogue.
Yeah.
And so Steve probably didn't know what the fuck was going on with Iron Man.
Yeah, well, that and how Iron Man beats him is really lame. Like, it's good up until Iron Man's final solution for defeating the villain. That is just
yes, which I suspect stupid. Would be better if they hadn't wasted 3 pages on the suiting up for something that had already been revealed on the cover.
Yeah, yeah, it's... I mean,
because that screamed, we've run out of pages.
Yeah, but, I mean, they could have come up with a much better way to defeat the villain. I can already think of two or three, right, involving electricity and magnets and so on and so forth to beat the villain. You know, there's no need for it to be this stupid. The ending is the lamest crap. But the rest of it's not that bad. It's really not. And the side story with Pepper is amusing, if nothing else.
I think... I'm guessing Bill and I gave this one the same rating, and a three.
I gave it a 3.
Yeah. A couple of the characters do return. You know, the classic Charlton Carter returns in Iron Man, the Iron Age, number one. And then Mr. Doll does come back, that good old guy. He returns.
Nathan Dolly is his actual name.
Spider-Woman, issue number 3, is when he returns.
Nathan Dolly?
I'm deeply disappointed that that's not just a retelling of Iron Man's early days. I was hoping to never encounter Mr. Doll again. I mean, he wasn't that bad in this story, but he's just the puppet master with a stupider costume.
Yeah, he's shittier puppet master, like I said.
Yeah, for the most part.
And Puppet Master isn't exactly a top-tier villain either.
Excuse you. I don't know what you're talking about. Puppet Master's right up there with Porcupine.
Exactly.
My boy is.
Oh, boy.
Just you wait until they do Puppet Master dirty and Stan has to come up with some bullshit story about how he got plastic surgery in between issues because the artist drew him so off model.
Well, you both of you will be happy to know, since you're both such huge fans of the Porcupine, you will be happy to know that he still exists.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he shows up in She-Hulk.
Oh my god.
You're still watching that, aren't you?
No, I saw a photo.
My... Okay, I gotta catch up.
That guy was doing a review on a number of different shows, and... I was listening in, and he had some clips, like little, you know, 2-3 second clips from different episodes of different TV shows that he was reviewing. And Porcupine shows up in She-Hulk.
Oh, I might have to watch just that scene.
God damn.
Just to see how they do the Porcupine costume.
Oh my god, does that mean he can't be on my boys list anymore? Damn it.
I think She-Hulk is like the equivalent to holding the GCW World Championship, so you're probably fine.
That's okay. I just got a copy of Werewolf by Night, the new Marvel movie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we'll see. It could be good.
Well, I don't really...
Yeah, I'm basing that entirely off of having read most of the first run of Werewolf by Night.
Damn it. Don't tell me that. I love werewolf movies. They're one of my favorite freaking genres.
Oh, trust me, Jack Russell has nothing to do with normal werewolf movies.
Bill.
First off, his name is Jack Russell, and he's about as intimidating as one.
You're ruining this. I got all freaking excited. I was like, oh, a new werewolf movie that I haven't seen. Ooh, and it's Marvel, so it's probably going to be good quality. This could be great.
Well, damn it! How long is it? I don't even know how long.
It's an hour. It was a TV movie special.
Oh, so yeah. Well, I mean, I was gonna say it's more of a TV special, but it's pretty much. Yeah, no, I saw it. It came out today or whatever.
Yeah.
Or yesterday, whatever. I guess we should move on.
Yes, please.
I just looked up the Porcupine costume from She-Hulk.
Oh, did you?
Oh god.
It's fucking glorious.
Oh,
it
no.
Is,
I gotta,
isn't it? It's epic.
I gotta look now.
It's freaking epic.
I gotta look now. Just one moment. Any possible
I think
Bill's
listeners? Just an aneurysm.
Bill
I can't
is
breathe.
Dying. Oh my god!
Isn't that epic?
Is fucking awesome.
It's perfect.
That he's my new favorite amazing. Bad guy. Since I saw this picture, he's been my new favorite bad guy.
This is oh my chef's kiss. That's fucking beautiful.
I mean, this
he's
is
not
better
quite
than
Pat Rock, but he's up there.
I mean, I saw him because, like I said, I saw a little like 3 or 4 second clip, and I went, "Oh my fuck, that's a porcupine."
And, oh my god!
And I remember, you know, from our doing this podcast, all the talk about the porcupine. I thought, you can't be serious; it's not really him, but it is.
That's awesome! Oh my god, he's black. I wonder how upset people are.
I don't think they really give a shit.
It's a porcupine.
Well, no, it's you know, and that's one of the running issues I have with TV shows defending bad ratings by claiming people are racist or they're misogynistic, and it's like. You know what? Everybody's watching House of the Dragon and loving every goddamn second of it. And they've you know, race-swapped some actors to make them black for certain members of the family. And nobody's blinked at that. Nobody cares. It's got nothing to do with whether they're white or black. It has everything to do with bad writing and bad productions. All right. Anyway, having ranted on that for 5 seconds, we better get on to the next title.
Tales to Astonish, issue number 50, The Human Top. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko is inking, and Sam Rosen on letters. This is a September 1963 release, and this is a 13-page story. But don't get... there's a twist to this one. This is the start of a two-part story.
And even just this part feels way longer than 13 pages.
Lee Kirby so, Marvel Masterpiece.
I mean, this is an alright cover.
I don't know what you just said. Your mic went funny for a sec.
So, we're talking about Tales to Astonish number 50?
Correct.
Yes.
5-0. I'm doing it.
Okay.
Yes.
You have fun with this trash.
Giant Man and the Wonderful Wasp battle the unbeatable human top. This is a Lee Kirby Marvel Masterpiece. Okay.
Yeah.
So we open up with our first glimpse of the Human Top as we get a little introduction. Like, let's face it, Giant Man seems to have taken comic fandom by storm. Okay. So they're kind of building
that's
up Giant Man.
That's not for another 10 years.
We open up with an introduction to the guy who is actually the Human Top, and his name is Dave Cannon. What a shitty name. We see him fucking spinning, like Human Top, and he's kind of a rotten little bully as he threatens some standard buys. We see him spin away fast from police and everything, and how he has grown up to be a little shit and commit these crimes, and how he's a little cheater as well. He's cheated his way through competitions with his fast spinning ability.
Come on, make it exciting. Come on, Ryan.
I'm
That's
working
asking
with,
for a lot. I've read this comic.
I'm working with what I got. we see that the Human Top's name starts to get plastered all over some newspapers. None of them are the Daily Bugle, so they're not as good. and Hank sees them, and he's like, oh, this might be a job for Giant Man. I'm going to kick his ass. Wasp gets a call from Hank, and he's like, just want to remind you, we have a session in an hour. And he's like, remind me, I've been at the beauty parlor all day preparing.
Uh-huh.
And so he does his Hank
stuff. The character
stuff
assassination of Janet Van Dyne is in shitty. Full operation here.
Yeah. they gather together, and Hank talks about his growth again and calls her a shorty.
Oh, honey, want to see my growth?
Yeah, he's a tall lad. you know, it really explains what is attractive about Hank Pym. No, he's got
great
growth.
He takes a blue pill and then gets bigger?
Yeah, he has great growth. So Hank goes into talking about the Human Top.
After he shows messages. Her his growth.
Yes.
Hank Pym.
This is a family comic that happened between panels.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So he's getting messages from his aunts and has learned that good old Human Top has a plan to rob the Danley's department store. That is the name of the store, Danley's. So now that Hank knows his plan, they've got to stop him. Remember when I said this was two parts? That means this story doesn't conclude in this issue.
Oh, goody.
So we see Dave Cannon doing some Dave Cannon things and practicing his Human Top abilities. You know what? On reflection, maybe this isn't that good.
No shit.
Wait, stop the fucking bus. You thought this was good at some point?
Yes, they did.
We'll get to that later.
Okay. I want some of what you're smoking.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm high on life and only life.
Right.
We see Human Top's plan to rob Danley's is actually successful. And Hank learns that he actually can't catch this Human Top, even in his larger form. We get a hilarious panel of Hank crouching behind a counter, swallowing his blue pill, getting ready to stop the Human Top.
Please tell me it's blue.
When you said hilarious panel, I thought it was the one where he was going face first into a lamppost.
No, I haven't gotten there yet. He almost gets run over in his large form, trying to chase the Human Top. Human Top is gloating like he does quite a bit. We see quite a lot of gloating in these two parts. And Hank does a lot of different things, trying to catch him. He gets some ants in play. Wasp shrinks down, trying to direct things going on. And Hank gets him stopped for a second as the ants help to break the ground apart somehow that I forget and I don't really care about because it's stupid. And then Human Top gets back on his feet and starts spinning away and makes Hank run into a fucking a light pole, as Bill said. And then Hank also runs into a Hanan sign. You know, I think I found out why I like this issue.
Hank getting hit in the face with metal objects—that part is pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually part of it because these two parts like bury Hank quite a bit, and it's actually hilarious. So Hank continues to be unsuccessful. He even runs right through a fence trying to chase the Human Top, and it is still unsuccessful. And eventually, the Human Top does escape. We see the Human Top comfy in his bed looking at the newspaper talking about how Giant Man was defeated by the Human Top in a dramatic chase. More like a comedic chase. He's like, oh man, not bad for a beginner. I made all the front pages. And he's like, the beauty of it is that the public will end up sympathizing with me because I'm the little guy. So,
well, at least he's courageous enough to admit it.
Hey, you know,
don't worry, he drives a big truck in his civilian life to compensate.
Oh, okay.
Hashtag humble. So we go back over to Janet and Hank, as Hank is now doing training sessions to try to gain the speed to take on the Human Top. He is not very successful. He repeatedly fails and... We see Janet even think to herself how she has the settings on low and doesn't even really have it going as fast as the Human Top would be going. And we end off. Janet's like, oh, I hope I'm only operating at half speed, and we only have a few weeks to get him in shape. I hope. What if the Human Top strikes before then? And then we end on a panel seeing the Human Top carrying dynamite for some reason. As we see him get ready to menace again.
I love how he's lit the dynamite despite the fact that he's nowhere near where he's just planning to attack.
But of course, this tale was too big and too filled with surprises.
Well, like the story, the dynamite was a slow burn.
Yes.
Yeah. This is horrible stuff.
To be continued in Tales of the Astonishing, issue number 51.
Oh, thank God. We're done with it for now?
No.
crap.
51 is literally the next comic we will be covering.
They grouped them together. This will start to happen more slowly.
Although, generally, the stories will be better.
Yeah, because it's not Giant Man.
You can take
I may have enjoyed this the first time I read it. I may have given this a 3-star. On reflection, a bit inflated. I think a lot of my enjoyment was burying the hell out of Hank. But, you know, here we are.
Spoilers, this was the better half of the story.
Was it?
I gave this 2 stars. The art was good, and I respect the fact that they were willing to make their hero just completely lose.
It was
nice.
They
failed at the execution, but I respect the idea of it.
Yeah.
Because generally, even when your hero gets humiliated by the villain, they're still supposed to come across as likable. And in this, it was just funny that bad things were happening to Hank.
See, the problem is Hank isn't likable.
Yeah, exactly.
He's really not.
No, he's really not. Yeah. Do we have any more comments on this one?
It sucks.
Fair enough.
It really sucks.
On to issue number 51.
Yay!
So, part 2 of Showdown with the Human Top. This is, of course, from October, because this is a monthly comic. 13 pages again, because yay. So, if anybody keeping track, that means that this this got 26 pages in total for this overall story. We had Army... the differences on the team this month are George Russo was added to the cover, and Artie Simic is the letterer this time. And
Dick Ayers inks it instead of Ditko.
Yes, that is different too. I didn't realize that for a second. Yeah, they did switch. So, this issue opens up with Hank still training to try to catch the Human Top.
At half
speed.
Wait,
no, he...
He is training... He is training. He made a robot to represent the Human Top.
Okay, good. It's...
In other words, Dick Ayers didn't look at what Steve had inked last issue.
And we see that Hank
Because there's very little actual involvement from Kirby on this art. This is almost pure Ayers art.
Yeah.
Kirby might have done the faces.
So we see that Hank is actually momentarily successful as he catches the Human Top robot for a split second, but he quickly escapes again.
I put a bit of a spin on it.
Hank kind of gets upset for a second, and he's like, "How will I ever catch the real thing?" Yes,
it speaks to the quality of this comic that Dan's pun is better than it.
Come on, Ryan, make it exciting. Come on.
You want exciting? Well, here's the
make
Human Top.
Make it exciting.
He throws dynamite right at a ship and sinks it.
Wow. Really?
He uses it to cause a distraction to get the police over in one area so he can go out to the other side of the city and cause mayhem.
Gosh, Rooney. Really?
He's really smart. We see Henry pop another pill, and he's ready to go. He's large again. And
it's yellow this time, so he's on Cialis.
He's on Cialis.
I mean, there was a white one last issue, but I was just going with the
phone. Yeah, it wasn't colored, so I was making Viagra jokes with it, but this time it actually is colored like an ED medicine, so...
As they're trying to go get ready to take on the Human Top, they are bum rushed by a ton of fans. I didn't know that Henry had any of those, but here we are.
Giant Man fan club is a thing for a bit.
Yeah, it comes in another issue or two. More importantly,
it shows up in several more issues, I think.
Yeah, probably. He has his fan club. He has to get them. He's like, now hear this, and they're all on the ground because of how loud he is. Because you know he's 12 feet tall,
and big.
And they leave, and they spot the Human Top. So Hank goes a chasing, and He still can't quite catch the human top, yep. It's a lot of chasing in these two parts. He does momentarily grab him, but human top just spins right out. Hank does an impressive dive over a vehicle, but then fucking falls right into the ground. Hank gets chased again and gets his leg trapped in a sewer.
He'd almost broke his leg there.
Yes. He gets his leg trapped in a sewer grate, which is fun. Human Top is running around the cops as they're trying to get Hank's leg pulled out. One of the cops uses a fire hydrant to spray down Human Top, which actually slows him down momentarily, enough for Wasp to be able to grab onto him.
Yanking my lariat.
I can't be the only one who was hoping for Hank to break his leg in that sewer outlet so that they'd sell him to the glue factory.
Human Top quickly spins a Wasp off of him and manages to momentarily escape. And Hank has been freed finally, talking about his sore little leg. Actually, it's a big leg. So Hank is meeting with some... he's in a top-level meeting with some guys, talking about how they're gonna clamp down on the Human Top. And this turns into a whole ploy to where... he's working together with the police, and they, the chase starts up again, and it turns out that Hank, working with the law enforcement, has helped to block off and close off he blocks off sections of the city, is essentially what happens, and so Human Top is trapped to a certain area. It just ends really fast, huh? He lets Human Top tire himself out a little bit, because, you know, he's still human, he's gonna get tired eventually, and then that's when Hank decides to pounce, and he manages to kind of get a hold of him and fucking pounds him, and knocks him out. And that's it. The cops, he gives Dave Cannon to the cops, and we're good. Wasp asks why he couldn't slip out of Hank's grasp as easy as before. And Hank reveals that he came up with an ingenious invention to... he just put some glue on his gloves so Dave Cannon couldn't escape.
Ah. Oh. Wow. That's brilliant.
We end off with us being promised that the next issue of Giant Man is even greater than ever, so be sure to come back.
Well, it's not like I can get
in
worse.
In their defense, that's not hard.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's right.
After taking all that Viagra, Giant Man certainly is.
Oh. You know, I don't know if I've said this before, but on reflection, this one might not be that good either.
Really, Ryan? Really?
I'm not proud to say this, but I did also give this one a 3 when I first read it.
Are you serious?
Tell
me you're joking.
I'm not. I must have been in a really good mood.
What warranted a 3?
I don't know.
Tell me what it was about it that you said, wow, this is above a 2. The bad guy? Like, was the bad guy?
Hank almost broke his leg.
And that made it a 3 instead of a 2.
Still more Hank embarrassment. You know... I really don't know besides just
laugh.
Embarrassing Hank. Yeah,
okay.
Pretty much.
Okay, because I'm
also
struggling.
Gave this one a 2. This was just painfully boring. I actually enjoyed this half more than the other half.
This one flows better.
Half was like 80% chase, and so it was a really fast read.
Okay, it flows better. It's easier to read. That's part of the reason I like. Because if I gave the last one 3, I kind of felt like I should give this one 3 too.
I mean that's fair reasoning. I did not give the other one 3 either. I actually, when I reread it for the podcast, I'm kind of regretting not giving it a 1.
Yeah, I'm struggling
but
to find a reason to make it a 2.
It made too much sense for me. My rating tends to be. 2 is boring, 1 is either actively offensive or I can't figure out what the hell's going on because it's too bad.
See, for the most part, I wasn't bored, though, reading these.
Okay.
I thought a lot of it was dumb, but I wasn't really bored. Well, I felt like it was more on the Human Torch scale than the normal Ant-Man scale.
And I mean, that's fair reasoning, because I've definitely given, like, not exciting comics 3 before, just because they're completely fine. Like, 3's kind of my, it's an average comic rating.
Well, the other part of why I got a free 3 is because comparing it to other Ant-Man and Giant-Man stories we've had, this really isn't that awful.
Okay, you know, from that line of logic, it almost makes sense.
That's part almost. Of what I'm always comparing to other stuff when I'm doing these ratings too. Yeah. So that was part of it.
But
yeah, I tend to compare to what's around it, but not really to the series itself. So yeah. Like these ones, coming off the last bunch of comics we read, these were definitely more boring.
That's fair.
I would agree with you. These were better than most of the Ant-Man stories.
It's not the worst.
Which is not saying much, but I mean.
No, I'm not saying these are good. They just didn't suck as hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it barely makes a 2 for me. Barely. Like by
That's
the
fair
friggin'
enough.
Skin of its teeth.
Somehow. Yeah, I mean, it's right out of like a 2.5 for the second part. The first part for the average was, what was it?
2.6.
Okay, yeah. So it's they're pretty much the same. Just the first part's a little better. But yeah. So the next time we see the Human Top, I know we all want to see him again, is issue 55. Not long to wait, actually. Interesting.
Human Top is basically Giant Man's main villain.
That doesn't surprise me.
That's embarrassing.
I know, right? When you have Porcupine right there.
I know, right?
What's
wrong?
They
eventually do something vaguely interesting with him. But that's mostly in Avengers.
Well.
Okay. That was horrible.
I guess
let's move on
to the 5-page B story that we all love these. Larry's with Stan. Poor Larry.
The title?
Somewhere waits a Wabo.
Yeah,
no,
somewhere waits a Wabo.
Comic?
Astonished 51 B story.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the shitty 5-page stories. Larry Leiber does the art on this one as well. And then George Russo is on inks. George Russo, oh yeah, that makes sense. Cover is the same. Alrighty, Simic on letters for this. And October, yep, that we've already in 5 pages. Yep, okay.
Okay.
Cool. Somewhere waits a Wabo. Jan is back to tell some cops some stories. Is that cops or it's orphans?
They're veterans in an old
veterans
hospital.
They're
veterans
like
this
in
time.
This one is veterans, I think.
Yeah,
she's at a
veterans hospital. Yep. And orphans homes. And okay, whatever.
But these are veterans. I don't know why they mentioned
veterans.
The orphans homes.
Me neither. I knew there was one of these that they mentioned orphans and they look like full-on adults, so it must be this one.
Yeah, I think there is one where she actually tells a story to orphans, too.
There is, yeah. So, this is a story... That's it.
Do you want me to do this one?
No.
Okay.
It's, she tells a story about about a space mercenary space pilot named Rack Morgan.
In the year 2000.
For money, he would do anything. And we mean anything.
Take place in the year 2000, okay? We've got to establish that, so this is the far future.
I'm really glad we're establishing all these contexts on this really important
story.
For
the record, that's not Dan being sarcastic.
No,
I know.
I'm serious.
This is no. I'm explaining it to the audience who might think that
okay.
That's just Dan being
me. me.
Yeah, it's actually established to have happened 22 years ago.
Yeah, she makes sure to say that the story takes place in the year 2000 before she goes right into the full story. I just didn't care to mention it because
I wouldn't have if it wasn't for Dan's tendency to make claims that are less than truthful about the comics.
What, that they're crap?
Oh, no, because that's a justifiable claim. I mean your embellishment.
Oh, no, I would never.
So, we see Rack Morgan narrowly misses Clyden with another ship, and some other people on another ship spot him, and they're like, oh, this ship belongs to Rack Morgan. So, God, this sucks.
Yes, it does. Do you want me to do it?
Rack Morgan gives a lieutenant or whatever, somebody from the ship, he gives them a drink, and it turns out that the drink is poisoned or whatever, and he gets dizzy and he passes out. And Rack Morgan is like, the knockout drops I slipped in his drinks work like a charm. Oh, I just remembered what my note was for this. He dropped some space roofies. Rack Morgan's like, now while he's sleeping, I'll go to the spaceport and fly up the Blake Clark cargo myself. along the way, going back, he comes across meteors, but he avoids them. But to avoid them, he lands down on this strange planet, where there's old wives' tales about these creatures called wobbles. He lands. He's like, oh my god, there's these huge gold chunks right in the open. No wonder they've told these stories. This is to keep us away from all this gold. But turns out, the gold is not gold. It's wobbles. The wobbles do exist. It's not just an old wives' tale. And Rack Morgan, in his overconfidence, has got himself killed. The end. So don't be overconfident, kids, and don't be a bastard. Don't be a space bastard that gives space roofies to people.
Yeah, and steals space gold.
Yeah. Ta-da.
Boy, I'm glad Five we covered pages. This story.
Oh, yeah, right?
It's
one star.
Canon because Wasp told it. That's it.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Standards are low. Yeah, one star. Fuck
one
this.
Star. This is just that story from like our first or second episode about the hut that was the monster. It's just that again.
We're three white guys doing a podcast on a Friday night. Standards have nothing to do with anything except an absence thereof on our part.
I think the absence is self-respect.
That too. that too.
But yeah, I love that this is how we come together and hang out.
Man, my life is such a joke.
On that note, let's move on to Strange Tales. Strange Tales issue number 116. This is the A story. Oh no! I forgot this issue was the Puppet Master in the clutches of the Puppet Master. That's incredible. We got Mr. Doll and Puppet Master in the same episode.
Oh,
that's incredible.
Boy.
This one, Stanley and Dick Ayers. George Russo is on inks. Jack Kirby does a shitty cover. And Ray Holloway is on letters. October 1963 release. This is a 13-page story. And I gave this one to Dan.
Seriously?
Yeah, I wanted to give Bill the strange story this
okay,
time.
Well, before we start, how many pages is the story?
13.
I've got a 5-line synopsis for it.
That's probably fine.
I had a bigger synopsis for the Wobbos. Seriously.
I can fill in any gaps that are necessary.
Okay, yeah, here we go. In the clutches of the... Why do you give me fucking Fantastic Four? I hate Fantastic Four. Having survived his last battle with the Fantastic Four, the Puppet Master plans to get his revenge on the group, creating puppets of both the Human Torch and the Thing, and using his stepdaughter Alicia as a catalyst. The Puppet Master manipulates the two into fighting each other. Ooh. The fight takes him across the city.
Okay, I need to expand on how he manipulates them into fighting, because it's particularly heinous.
Ooh, good.
I like
heinous.
He takes control of Johnny And he sends Johnny to Alicia's house to sexually assault her.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
That little detail.
That little
His
detail.
Stepdaughter.
That little
yeah,
detail.
Don't forget the puppet master is the stepfather of Alicia, by the way, too. Just to make it better.
To make it better.
Yeah. And the entire plan is for the thing to come in and catch Johnny making out with Alicia, and then they fight.
Okay.
They sure do.
Okay. Now, the fight takes them across the city, where the puppet master goes in for an up-close view of the fight. Spotted by Alicia, she informs the torch of the puppet master's machinations. And the torch uses its flame powers to destroy the puppets he's using to control them, burning puppet master's hands beyond recognition.
No.
Oh. No.
This is like a 10-page fight between Torch and Thing with a little bit of story to justify it.
That's why your synopsis is so
short. There's nothing going on.
It's a lot of fighting.
A lot of fighting. Okay.
Yeah. It was suggested by children.
So it would seem. Anyway.
No. It actually says on the title page, based on an idea by Tommy and Jimmy Goodkind of Hewlett Harbor, New York.
Ooh, okay. No
it's
problem.
It's literally based on a concept by children.
Well, so he's in just about the same level as Stan Lee's writing. Okay, we're good. The Thing is about to pummel the puppet master until Alicia talks him into letting him go. End of synopsis.
Yep.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like I said, this is just a fight.
Okay.
Decent fun. It's and, not anything.
I actually, by Strange Tales standards, this was really good. Other than the really uncomfortable bit about Puppet Master setting up the potential rape of his own stepdaughter.
Mm.
But if you ignore that, it's quite a...
Yeah, but yeah. Once you pass that incredibly uncomfortable setup, the actual fight is pretty fun.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it is.
I gave this one 3 stars.
Me too.
Really?
Part of that is just a boost off Puppet Master returning, but yeah.
Like
for
nothing,
me. For
yeah,
me.
Nothing happens in this story, but it actually a really enjoyable superhero fight.
Okay.
I'm a puppet master, Mark, so... yeah.
Well, to be fair, superhero fights are what it's all about. Whether it's against each other or against bad guys. That is kind of what
yeah,
this
and Johnny
is
and Thing usually match up pretty well.
Yeah. I just... Yeah, it's the best trope for... superhero comics is to have them fight. Otherwise, what's the point in being a superhero?
And honestly, with those two, it was about time they had a full story around revolving around a fight with those two. Anyway. It's almost surprising it didn't happen sooner.
Boy, I'm so happy we covered this story. It's part of the cornerstone of what
Aren't
makes
you glad
Marvel
I gave
great.
You this one?
Yeah, I am. I feel...
Hey, I gave you Iron Man, at least. So.
Okay, yes. Thank you for that.
If I didn't want to give Bill the Doctor Strange this week, you would have had Iron Man and Doctor Strange. So. Okay. I guess we'll just move on to the Doctor Strange story then, unless anybody else has any more comments.
Not really. Dick Iyer's art was great on that Human Torch story. I will give him credit for that.
Okay.
Yeah, he did pretty well. I hate that cover by Kirby.
Oh, the
whatever.
Cover is atrocious. But the internal art was actually really good.
Oh,
that's
Russo's
probably part
was...
of why I gave it a 3, because when it's a fight issue, it's all about the art.
I hate when Russo's inks the covers that Kirby does. It's never good. But yeah, the B story, Doctor Strange, Return
okay,
to the Nightmare
you give
World.
Give people the title of the comic?
Strange Tales 116, B story.
Okay.
Return to the Nightmare World. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. And I already sent McLeod's this one. And this one is Doctor Strange keeps his 8 pages. And
yeah,
this
I don't
one's
think
for Bill.
He's going back to 5 anymore.
That's good.
Yeah. Although in this case, they probably could have gotten by with 5.
Yeah. As we teased last week, I'm not the biggest fan of this Doctor Strange.
This is the worst. I'll just say it. This is the worst Doctor Strange we've covered up to this point.
It is.
I didn't mind it, but it's not as good as the other one. Anyway, this one opens with Nightmare in his nightmare realm plotting revenge on Doctor Strange for the last time they met. And he's realized that in order for him to conquer the Earth, he needs to deal with both Doctor Strange and the Ancient One. So he plans to deal with Doctor Strange first.
Okay.
And the way he does it is by causing people to fall asleep and not be able to awaken, as he always does. And so the police go to see Doctor Strange to see if he can help them with this mystery. And so Strange goes and examines one of the patients, and he uses his amulet and realizes that it's the work of a Nightmare. And so he goes back to the Sanctum Sanctorum, and he casts a spell to take himself to the Nightmare Realm in astral form. And he leaves and travels through the Nightmare Realm as I scroll past like 4 pages of ads. And this is just a lot of Ditko art. And eventually he runs into Nightmare. And Nightmare talks some shit, but Strange finds the souls of the people that Nightmare has imprisoned. And he goes to freedom, but suddenly Nightmare destroys the bridge that Strange is walking on. And he falls fully into the Nightmare Realm. And then Nightmare releases a spiny beast onto him.
Ooh, porcupine.
No space, by the way, if you're wondering. Yeah. And the spiny beast forces Strange back to the edge of a cliff. And is about to force Strange off the cliff to his death, I guess, although he's an astral projection, so I'm not sure if a fall would actually kill him, but Nightmare seems to believe it would. But just then, Doctor Strange shines the light from his amulet directly into Nightmare's eyes, and Nightmare freaks out and covers his eyes and accidentally zaps his spiny beast with his taser stick and kills it. And so Doctor Strange hops back on the bridge and takes the souls of the people out, and he is one again, and as he leaves, Nightmare yells threats at him for how he'll beat him next time. And that's the end.
That was okay.
Yeah, it's fine, but it's not at the level of the previous Doctor Strange stories we've had.
I think my problem with this one, part of it was me comparing it to the other ones, because it's kind of a bit of an almost big drop down, but it's still fine, but I just wasn't feeling this one as much, and I materially, I don't know if it's coming across, but there we go.
It's not
that bad. I gave it a 3, but it's a low 3.
Yeah.
Which is what it averages out as on the site. It's a 3.1.
Yeah,
so.
You know what? I'm going to go with Bill on this and give it a low 3 simply because it's different. Like, it's...
And you can always count on Doctor Strange for different.
Let me rephrase that. It's different, yes, but it's a lot more creative than what they're doing with a lot of the other stories right now. You know, it's a matter of them just taking everything in a completely different direction and context, where, you know, Doctor Strange isn't fighting against supervillains. He's fighting against, you know, demons and you know, using spells instead of, you know, superpowers and things like that. And, you know, I don't know. It is different. And that brings it up a level, just because it's not the usual crap that you're getting from, you know, Fantastic Four and Torch and, you know, all that stuff, and Ant-Man. So, yeah, I'd say it's better than a lot of the stuff being published right now.
Yeah, this one was disappointing for Doctor Strange, but still better than most of what we're reading.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it was better than a decent amount of the stuff we covered this week, so. Probably the only thing better is the Iron Man, so. Well, I guess the Torch story, maybe, but. Just on the pure fun of it, but yeah, I don't have much more to say about that. I guess we'll look at people's next appearances. Juan was still unnamed in this story. He will be named soon. The Dreamstalker, who has been in continuity with Nightmare so far, which
yeah,
has been
Dreamstalker's
fun.
Nightmare's horse.
Which he won't appear again. They won't appear again until after next appearance of Nightmare. They don't appear until Doctor Strange number 170. But Nightmare will return in issue 122 of Strange Tales. The Spiny Beast will never return.
Oh, yeah, it's dead.
So if it's his and horse and it's female, that does make it a nightmare.
Wow.
What? I'm just pointing that out.
Unfortunately, Dreamstalker is a stallion.
Oh, damn.
I assume that's in the Marvel handbook because I don't think they ever gendered a horse in the comic.
Ah. Yeah, that could get awkward. Everybody think it was Giant Man. I'm just saying.
Well.
Okay, somebody got to talk.
difficult. So, we have made it through our comics for the week, and for next week's lineup, it's going to be an interesting episode. We've actually got some fun stuff next week.
Opening with a doubleheader that Dan's going to be thrilled by.
Yes, we open up next week with Amazing Spider-Man issue number 8.
Oh, joy.
The
look,
A story.
I'm turning into Giant Man. I'm so excited.
Oh man, you're large, huh? So Amazing Spider-Man number 8, the A story, will see Spider-Man take on the terrible threat of the Living Brain. What is the Living Brain?
Who cares?
Come back and find out. Pretty
it's
much
not Krang.
Pretty much because he doesn't appear again for who knows how long. Or well, they don't. It doesn't. Whatever. Pronouns are hard. No, feel like a Republican saying that. The B story of Amazing Spider-Man sees Spider-Man tackle the Torch. Spider-Man and Human Torch go face to face, and surprisingly, Spider-Man is the heel in the program.
it's a bad enough idea that when they bring Doris Evans back later, they just ignore this issue.
Yeah, it's. Ooh, the B story is something. Tales of Suspense, issue number 49, is next for a fun crossover with the Angel of the X-Men, which is a really decent story.
That'd be fun.
You'll probably like that one, actually. Tales of Suspense 49, B story, sees a Never Watcher story in the Saga of the Sneepers, which I thought wasn't terrible for a shitty five-pager. Then we end off with a couple of Thor stories, first with Journey into Mystery number 99, the A story, which is the first part of a two-parter, revolving around the mysterious Mr. Hyde, and then we read issue number 100, the A story, which is part two of the Mr. Hyde story, and we see that conclude. Pretty fun week ahead.
I never thought there would be a day when I'd be looking forward to an X-Men story. But somehow you ingrates have managed to make that happen. Where has my life gone? How pathetic is that?
Bill probably said that in 2015. At I never thought I'd be looking forward to an X-Men story again.
Yeah.
Hey, I've always been an X-Men fan.
Yep. Really?
Yeah, X-Men was one of the first things I started reading.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah, Bill loves X-Men. I do, too.
That's fair. I was never... I mean, I
was just making a joke.
I talk a lot of crap because the initial run of X-Men before it went into reprints is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I always get excited when I see X-Men coming up just because I'm enough of a mark.
Okay. The thing is, I don't dislike X-Men. I just was never that big a fan. And I
was just... I was just making a joke because when Bill left off reading comics, the X-Men were in a rough spot. So.
Oh, yeah, when I stopped buying new comics, it was peak not wanting to publish anything good in X-Men because the wrong movie studio might get rights to it.
Yeah.
Good point.
It was when they were pushing the Inhumans to try to be X-Men, and the X-Men weren't getting pushed that well. And blah, blah.
I still haven't watched that. I keep meaning
it's not good.
I'm getting to it soon and might watch it.
I intend to at least try and watch the first episode, just so I know.
I watched a couple of episodes of it. I didn't terribly care for it.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I guess we will go into our conclusion here. If you are listening to this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and even share if you would like to. Give us some comments. Give us your thoughts on the podcast. Tell us what you think of the stories. We'd like to hear. Feel free
to share how hilarious that porcupine costume is from She-Hulk.
And know that we do apologize for the absolute stunning lack of quality, not only on the podcast, but on the comics we're covering.
I hope one day...
I'm apologizing for shitty 60 comics.
I am. If we're going to subject
maybe
people,
one.
Well, yeah, you were around back then. You might have been like one of Stan Lee might have been a pseudonym for you. You should feel bad.
You don't know that it wasn't.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, your brother.
Yeah, that's it. Wow.
Anyways, when my mic accidentally unplugs, it accidentally restarts the recording, so I'm going to end this before I possibly do any damage.
Okay.
We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and on Spotify. And on Spotify, click that poll and let us know which of the stories we've covered is your favorite. Anyway, guys, come back next week for what should be a pretty fun episode, and we will see you all next time, and peace out.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, everyone.
Bye-bye.